This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off the replacement training bundle. When I started sharing about my trichotillomania, I was way late in my 20s, like 27, and I was anonymous. I was still scared to death. And I tell people, you know, you see me now, I'll put my face out there. But it was very, very small baby steps. Very, very tiny, tiny, pushing myself out of my comfort zone. How was your experience with starting to be more open and share?
Yeah, you know, it, probably around that same time, that period right before I went to my first Trichotillomania Learning Center conference, leading up to that, I got into really thinking about how to make myself the happiest version of myself I could be. So I was in this place where I had discovered my wig maker, and she was just a godsend. She's still, I don't know what I would do if she left my life. So she's very important to me. But I had discovered her, and because I had kind of the safety and no longer had to worry about the cosmetic aspect of the hair pulling, it freed me up to think about how I was feeling. It had been so exhausting just managing the surface stuff that by the time I got that managed in a way that I felt really confident about, I felt just terrible. I felt exhausted emotionally. My moods were everywhere. I felt just agitated and combative all the time. I wasn't sleeping well. I was, you know, my appetite was off. I just did not feel like I was thriving in any sort of real way. And so I really began starting to peel back the layers on just human health and realizing that I was so frustrated with the medical system that I had been through, with the mental health care system I'd been through, people not really understanding the condition that I was dealing with, not asking the right questions I didn't feel like, not being engaged in at least the right kind of ways, probably doing the best they could. But in my mind, just, you know, not at all, you know, what I needed to do. So I knew I needed to find a medical team, and I started kind of peeling back, what do I need to do in my daily life just so that I can feel good? And started taking kind of a more functional medicine approach, even where it's, but why? Sure, I'm pulling my hair out, and maybe this medication will take the edge off my anxiety or allow me to kind of be in a place where now I can use my tools and I can reduce my pulling a bit. But I don't want to just keep layering on medications. Nobody was saying to me, well, how are you eating? What are you doing to manage stress in your life? You know, what are the things you're doing to put yourself in a different position if a pulling kind of situation happens? So honestly, I can't remember your original question, because now I'm kind of going off on a tangent. But I feel like because I went through that, I started getting really serious about my personal care products. I was really interested in reducing the toxic load for both myself and my family. I got very interested in my diet and kind of the types of things, the sugar, all the things that I felt like, forget pulling. You know, let's not even try to make some kind of connection right now between what we're eating and pulling. What I knew is that when I was eating a whole bunch of sugar and processed junk and fast food and everything ordered in, I feel terrible in all the ways, including trance-like pulling. I just notice it's a fact for me that when I eat a lot of sugar and have not been paying attention to the way I'm sleeping, the way I'm eating, I get into these trance-like pulls where I'm in the bathroom for an hour or more, and I'm sore, and it's repetitive stress injury, and it's just terrible to the point where I really, really started getting serious about my health, putting together my medical team, reducing my toxic load, really paying attention to my diet. And so because of that, I started doing little pieces of awareness for a lot of different things, some of which I've put to the wayside and are no longer anything I really, necessarily talk about actively. But I still care about all those issues. And one of them was, hey, I'm doing all of this because I suffer with trichotillomania. But it was the very sanitized version. It was the I stand up for BFRB awareness, which is great. I hope everyone says I stand up for BFRB awareness. But it was a very sanitized version that I started out with. And those were the baby steps that I kind of told a few people in my life. And then I went on and did one YouTube video where it was kind of, here's why I care about clean beauty. And here's why, it's October and I'm standing up for BFRB awareness. So I did a few of those little videos and things to kind of raise awareness. And then it went to the wayside and I continued with my life, and here we are. It wasn't until here, there are actually reasons. I actually just had a mental health scare here just a little bit ago that I'm now kind of recovering from. And that's what got this news cycle 6 years later. I haven't had a bipolar episode in 6, 7 years, which is a testament to my medical team, and just had one here in February. And so it renewed that there's got to be better. This is not all there is. I'm not going in and letting one more person put me on one more medication without me really looking and doing the work of what's helping and what's not. I'm just not willing to passively let this continue and let people that I don't feel are quite engaged enough or educated enough or informed enough be making decisions about what I'm popping in my mouth for the rest of my life. So, yes, baby steps. Leading ever more over the years to, we got to talk about this more. We got to talk about this more. Period.
When you were doing all of your personal research with your trichotillomania, asking the why and learning more about it, did you find that there were certain locations, whether it's in the house or in the car, that you knew that's where I like to go?
Yes. So definitely when I was younger, it felt like the habit and the boredom played more of a role. So I would notice it more if I was on the phone with my friends and it was just something to do with my hand. Homework was a big thing. If I was sitting in a chair reading, any of those activities where I was sitting down, sedentary, and needed something to do with my hands. For me, those are the easiest triggers for me to manage because I can use tools for habit and boredom. Those are the ones where your hand, it's the when your hand goes to your head, and if you just have that awareness, that one moment of sometimes it's that your hand hits a scarf instead of your hair. Sometimes it might be that you're wearing something around your wrist. Maybe you've got something that you kind of notice it the first time, so now you're playing with something. Reversing those habits and doing something else with your hands when you're bored, I found those are the most open or receptive to tools and really like taking those tools out of your toolbox and managing it. It was other things that are less attached to location, maybe. As I got older, it became my OCD, all of those kind of obsessive compulsive types of activities that caused me to be super hyper focused on things anyway, little details, planning, lists, things being in order. I found as I got older, my focused pulling actually got worse. So now my trigger is the bathroom. I don't use the brightest setting in my bathroom anymore. I turn it to like the second one that's the light that's over the shower, not the one that's right there. And then when I get home at the end of the day, I take off the wig, I put on the scarf right away. There are times I've gone a week without looking at the top of my head on purpose. And I just know, so I think that, that's a great question to ask because I think the very first thing you do is identify what those are for you. Is it that you just need to be reminded? It's an automatic trigger or, an awareness that you just need to have. Is it that you're a more obsessive, focused pulling? And so it's not a great idea to have bright lights and tweezers in the bathroom or to even start to lean forward and take a look at the white hair that's, it used to be the curly hair. Now I'm like, oh, geez, now they're white. Now we got a whole other situation. Happening here with the obsessive focus. So I just really, in my tracking and my journey, have to make sure that when it comes, if I can avoid that first pull, if I can use my tools when I'm boredom or when it's just habit, if I can just kind of nip it in the bud, I'm way more successful. I think the caveat in parentheses that I would put is stress sometimes is just a tough one when you have just a momentary something flares up and you're just upset and stressed. That can be hard. That's a time when I don't care what tool I have. I'm going to have to prevent the stress or the way I react to the stress, because once I'm in it, it's very, very difficult for me to start pulling out a fidget toy once I'm in it. That's what I found for me personally.
It took me a little bit to understand that, okay, you are managing it the best that you can. I can feel confident in myself and say, hey, I'm doing a really good job, even when sometimes all of the tricks don't work and I find myself pulling again, I can still feel successful in that. Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
I love that so much, mostly because I have been trying to find that balance between, on the one hand, and I'm just going to be really, really honest here, and I hope I don't offend anyone, because, and I think maybe I even said it briefly here before, I want to be so careful about people who have newly discovered that they have a BFRB, or a parent who is realizing that their child has a BFRB and they're looking for answers. And the answer they want to hear is not accept this as a part of yourself or your child, find ways to manage this as a chronic condition. Nobody wants to hear that really early on. And I'm sure there are stories of people who, started out with a BFRB and then have been in remission or recovery, whatever the word is kind of that we want to use there, for years. I've been struggling to find that balance between we got to have the self-acceptance and the self-love. It is what it is sometimes. And everybody's burden is different. And even if all of our root cause is the same, it's certainly presenting in different ways for everybody. So I have trichotillomania. Someone else might have a neurological condition or an autoimmune disorder or however else that this dis-ease, appears for you in your life. I think we have to have that self-love and that acceptance while not just laying down either. And I think here recently, that's what I got. I found myself just getting mad again. And it stemmed from my professional, the 15 years I've spent in my kind of professional world, where I realized, oh my gosh, we have to do better. This can't be it. So I want to find a balance between we got to accept and we got to self-love and we got to find a way to manage, while also saying, I don't believe we're there on where we're going to go. I don't believe we've learned everything we're going to learn. And I think there are some really smart people working behind the scenes to try to move the needle on what we know about this disorder. So I don't believe we're done. And I think we just need more voices speaking up so that we reduce the stigma and we get more interest and we get more attention focused on what is a prevalent condition with differing levels of severity. But I think that we do have to find that balance. And you want to provide hope, but you also don't want to be telling people that, do these three simple things and you'll never pull again. Because, and unless I'm a complete anomaly, I find that to be highly unlikely without active management, that it is always going to be something that's probably in the background for me that I'm going to have to actively manage. And I'm willing to take 15 different perspectives and tools to put them all together in managing this condition for myself.
I have two different things. The first thing is that when I started to care less about my trichotillomania, I noticed a positive swing in my pulling. And when I say I care less, it's not like I'm like, I don't care. I'll pull for hours a day. It's that when I gave up that idea of, oh, I want to be pull free forever. I want to be cured. When I gave that up and I said, if I pull, I don't care, I then noticed that I wasn't drawn to the mirror again. My pulling trances might have lessened because I'm not feeding that negative cycle because I'm like, oh, who cares? It's chronic. I'm doing my best. Versus before, I'd be in the mirror for 2 hours and being like, I can't believe you're still doing this. You look so ugly. And that fed it and continued that cycle. So it is a it's a strange balance to say you don't care, but also that's freeing to me
Free.
somehow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To say that, I mean, and we did mention that, briefly, where it's just kind of when it's everything you think about, when it's everything you do is planning for the behavior, engaging in the behavior, recovering from the behavior, trashing yourself over the behavior, like it goes on and on and on. If you can take out just a couple of those, which is just the beating yourself up part. All right, let's just start there. Let's just take out the you're so ugly. Why are you still doing this? It's been 2 hours. Who does this? If you can just take away that piece and say, you know what, I struggle from time to time. The freeing of not having to think about all the things. So it's not necessarily maybe that you're pulling stop forever because you didn't care, but it lessened that emotional trauma. I think that maybe is what it would all come back to is when you're doing that emotional beating yourself up as well as the physical act of pulling, of course you're going to pull more. You're upset. For me, at least, one of the five triggers that I've identified as things that are going to lead me to pull are stress and anxiety. Well, I certainly am going to be stressed and anxious if I think that I'm an awful, dreadful person who shouldn't show my face in public. If anybody ever saw me, they'd be so disgusted. I should just really hide in this hole and never come out ever. Well, if I take away that part of it, and now I'm just left with some pulling with my other four kind of triggers, well, then I've mitigated some damage. It was uncomfortable for people to think about, but sometimes we're not talking about the person not engaging anymore in this activity. What we're talking about mitigating the harm from that activity. So it's not that we're saying you're going to stop pulling forever, but if we can take away just a little bit of the harm that results, you're going to have the hair loss. That's the part that you're going to have to deal with. But why also have all the emotional trauma that we've attached to it? At least get rid of that part.
The other thing I was going to say was when we were first diagnosed and growing up with trichotillomania, I didn't have the term body-focused repetitive behavior. That's like
No.
fairly new. And so I am very excited that one, I know a ton of people who grew up around the same time that I did, and they're now mental health professionals. They're focusing on helping other people with BFRBs. They're doing all these things because there wasn't that support when we were growing up. And now there will be. So I am very excited to see what comes.
Absolutely. And, I'll kind of add to that with my background a bit because that's what I've been excited about seeing. I have seen these individuals who are, older that clearly have been living with a BFRB for a long time that are starting to be nutritionists and neuroscientists and MDs and psychologists and all of these things. I think you're right. I'm seeing all of that. And I think from my perspective, that was the wake-up call where I've been a professional patient advocate in the biotech and pharmaceutical space for 15 years. I've worked with neurological conditions, autoimmune disorders, viral infections, rare cancers. I'm sitting down and talking to people. My entire job is to sit down and talk to individuals and families that are struggling with debilitating disorders that are disrupting their lives and making sure that their voices are at the table where treatment and clinical trial conversations are taking place. And it occurred to me, I'm not doing this for the disorder that I have, that I and my family for decades have been struggling with, sometimes more than others. I don't see it as a huge struggle in the way I used to, but nonetheless, my family is affected by this disorder. And here I am taking up the banner for every disorder under the sun that someone hires me and signs my paycheck for. And it occurred to me, it's a creative outlet. And why am I not advocating on behalf of trichotillomania and all body focused repetitive behaviors? And so that is exactly where I landed, where we're all in it, right? Look at you. I mean, you're starting these companies and having these conversations and creating these tools and all of these things because we all, number one, have to be there for one another and the tools aren't out there. So let's make them. You don't always have to be invited in the front door. Sometimes you create your own door or create your own table if no one's asked you to sit down, right? That's how advocacy works. No one's paying enough attention. All right, well, we're gonna do some of this ourselves, and then we're gonna get the attention of the right people, and we're gonna start to move the needle on this. So I think more and more of us that just are gonna start asking questions And those of you who have been asking questions for years now, and hopefully other people that have been kind of more on the sidelines, not wanting to say out loud, I rub the root of a hair across my lip, or I sit in the bathroom with tweezers for hours on end. No one wants to say that right now, but maybe if enough of us that come out and say, you know what, I have a pretty average life, a pretty normal, I'm married, I got a couple teenagers, I've got a dog, I garden. I have a pretty normal life, but I also have to manage a body-focused repetitive behavior, and it's okay. So I hope that more and more of us, and you are certainly facilitating this by inviting all of us in and inviting us to have a conversation with you.
Something that I really craved that I hope I'm doing. I hope everyone, anyone who is in the community who is sharing, I believe that they are doing this. Having younger people see us and say, oh, you turned out okay. That was my big
Yes.
thing.
I said that to my husband when I first, so obviously, I mean, I had a personal Instagram account for a long time. And then I started just as a creative outlet, really, kind of the tricky gardener. But that's what I said to my husband was, I wanted a creative outlet. I wanted to show people that, hey, I'm just a middle-aged gardener, but I also am willing to talk about trichotillomania. And that I think younger people who are starting out and are still in that place of, I'm hiding in a corner and I hope no one notices that I'm over here doing this behavior. And I can't answer my mom's questions about what's so wrong in my life that I'm doing this. My mom asked that question. I felt terrible that I couldn't answer her about why I was doing this to myself. So if I can channel that younger version of myself, if I could look forward and see that I was going to be happily married 20 years and sending my first child off to college, all the things that I said I wanted. And here I am. Did trichotillomania stop me from doing that? No, it made the road a tiny bit rockier. It definitely made it so I had to find the right person to partner with in life, and that I had to look for the right types of companies to work for and friends to have that will allow that kind of latitude for me to need different allowances from time to time. But I think you have nailed it on the head that part of the advocacy work, part of the standing up and saying the thing and talking about the thing is making it so that people know you're not always going to be crying in a corner telling yourself that you're ugly on a daily basis. Feel the thing, find the tools, find a way and a life that you can be excited about, pull yourself up. And whatever life looks like for you, not everyone, my life isn't perfect for everyone. Your life isn't perfect for everyone, but we've found a way to create lives that work for us and that we can be excited about every day. And I think that's important to have hope if you're early on and you're thinking, is this all there is? Because it's not. Thank you.